allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome to the Thursday, September 3rd, 2009, regular meeting of the Los Osos Community Services Board of Directors. And to start with, could we have a roll call, please?
Director Sennett?
Here.
Director Cecilia?
Here.
Director Kelly?
Here.
Vice President Ohilski?
Present.
President Sparks?
Here. And to start with, could we have a report out of closed sessions for August 19th, August 27th, and September 3rd, Mr. Seitz?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience. I want to address the August 19th, 2009, and August 27th, 2009 closed sessions. Those all related to the appointment of the general manager in the ongoing search. And neither one of those two closed session meetings did that result in reportable action. As to today's agenda, I want to make an opening comment. We list a significant number of closed session items on our agendas. And the reason behind that isn't so much that we are going to discuss each one while we're in closed session. The board is attempting to meet once a month as a cost savings mechanism. And as a lawyers, we don't really know when significant information will come to our attention that needs to be discussed in closed session. So we, for cautionary reasons, we tend to overlist items on the agenda then underlist them, because then we get into a trap where we may be precluded from discussing them. So what I attempt to do when I make my reports out of closed session is to report only on those items that were actually addressed in closed session. So sort of bear with me. And I want to start with one that we can actually take report some action, and that is on agenda item D. Let me get you the exact date. February 24th, 2009. The district did hear a report from legal counsel on this claim, and on a 5-0 vote instructed legal counsel to provide notice to the claimant's attorney that the claim is rejected. I will just note that the district does not have jurisdiction over roads within the district. Been doing that. Now, as to the other items, we did briefly, and this is all pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 and parens B. This is existing litigation. We did briefly discuss some issues related to the bankruptcy action, but took no reportable action. Did discuss briefly the Los Osos Community Service District versus American Alternative Insurance Corporation. Again, this is a federal court action. We did discuss it briefly, but took no reportable action. The same with the Montgomery-Watson-Harza litigation. Again, we heard an update from legal counsel, but took no reportable action. We did discuss the Los Osos Community Service District versus Golden State et al. This is commonly known as the groundwater adjudication. Again, there was an update from legal counsel, but no reportable action. And lastly, we discussed Taxpayers Watch et al. This is the Measure B litigation. Again, they heard an update from legal counsel, but took no reportable action. The other items that are listed on the agenda were not discussed in closed session. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. And with that, we are going to go to general public comment for items not on the agenda. And again, this was a result of the board action at the prior meeting. Again, a reminder, this is going to be limited to 30 minutes. And I think before we start, I think Vice President Hilsky wanted to say a couple of words.
Yeah, I'd just like to comment really briefly on I was the one that made the motion to move the public comment to the beginning of the meeting. But I'd just like to make two observations, if I could. One is, you know, the issues that are to be discussed are items that are under the jurisdiction of the CSD. So we don't want to get way off task with public comment here. We want to stay on things that are under our jurisdiction. And secondly, this is just something and the people that have sat on this side of the table can speak to this, but the full time. Thank you.
Okay, and with that, we'll go ahead and start. I guess because we have 30 minutes, and also at the end of the meeting, we're going to allow public comment. So if I can actually get a show of hands right now of how many people intend to make general public comment for items not on the agenda. Is there a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it looks like we'll make it. It's about 7:11. We'll make 7:40. So it looks like we'll be able to get that all in, and then under this initial general public comment. So with that, let's go ahead and first speakers, please. Okay, go ahead.
How are we doing now? This evening, as you probably all know, our member of Congress, Lois Capps, is holding a forum on health care. Yesterday evening, the congressman from the rest of this county and other parts of the state held a town hall meeting on the subject of health care. And on tonight's agenda, while health care is not on the agenda, there is an item on the agenda relating to a letter to be sent in response to the Planning Commission from the CSD. And one of the points that that letter purports to make is the need for affordability as a target for the wastewater project. So I thought tonight I would make a few comments that relate to affordability. Just for your information, and so you can figure out where we might possibly get money for a wastewater project and why people in this community can't afford what is currently planned. The taxpayers in San Luis Obispo County, California, will pay $101.6 million for total Iraq and Afghanistan war spending since 2001. For the same amount of money, the following could have been provided. And I will spare you the entire list because it might bore you, but let's just start with 41,829 people with health care for 1 year. Or any of those things instead of this enormous military budget, we might have money for a decent wastewater project. So I would urge all of our members of the board and the public and the people out there in television land to ask your members of Congress, and indeed to ask this board, to ask the members of Congress to shift their priorities so that we can meet the needs of the people instead of spending it billions for war. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
My name is Keith Weimer, Los Osos Sustainability Group. I wanted to refer to some remarks that one of the board members made at the Board of Supervisors the other day, and that was Maria's comments relating to seawater intrusion and those concerned about seawater intrusion trying to distract people from the real issue, which is the wastewater project. I think that really belittles the issue of seawater intrusion, and I'm not sure that it really reflects that there's a true understanding of just how serious that problem really is. So I'm here to express some real concern about that. The Los Osos Sustainability Group is not talking about seawater intrusion because we have some agenda regarding the project. Our agenda is very clear. We want a sustainable community. And the way to get that is by making sure that we have a sustainable water supply. Everything that can be done to address seawater intrusion needs to be done to address it. And if the project can do something to address it, it needs to do that. And it needs to do as much as it possibly can, because it will have impacts on seawater intrusion, and we know that. This is not a game. We don't want to spend $150 million or more with the chance seawater intrusion will destroy the aquifer and have to turn around and spend another $150 million on desalination or imported water from Nacimiento with a project that's worth virtually nothing because our groundwater is not there. And I was concerned, and I'll express this now, that the ISJ studies came out and very little questioning of those ISJ studies occurred. And this was during the combined meeting. When I presented my plan, my sustainable plan for water use efficiency and water use management, demand management, Mr. What's going on? And they should happen right now. So anyway, that's my big concern, that seawater intrusion is definitely our biggest problem in terms of the sustainability of this basin. And I'm just hoping that this board gives it the due that it needs to be fixed. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Frank Cilio and Associates. My first question is to Marshall. See if you can give later on an update to your negotiations with the county regarding to put online all the old records that they have regarding Los Osos. I would appreciate that update. The other thing is that I want to say that in that study that was provided by Cleese and Associates, that study was paid for by your ratepayers that you represent. And you haven't questioned that study. And so I think it's important to look at that study to see, did the taxpayers or the ratepayers, did they get their money's worth out of that study? Did they get the answers that you've been looking for? Is the information correct that decisions can be made upon that information? If not, then you need to go back to them and say, hey, we want you to fix this. I've met with Mr. Cooney regarding the issues of property that I've saw that I believe was left out, and he sent an email forward a couple, I think it's been about 2 weeks. Hopefully, as
one day.
Well, no, I mean, well, one day that you sent it out, but we met a couple weeks ago. So hopefully, you send a copy of that email to the board members so they know what the information is, too. So I'm looking for evaluation of, you know, the correct evaluation of the wells that are in the basin, what, how much they are actually pumping, what wells were left out of that. Let's see. I also, you know, in that study, I haven't even had time to evaluate the individual water usage that they assigned to each property because I'm still working on the property that was not included or doesn't seem to be included, and we're trying to get answers to that question. The other thing is I'd never even question the boundaries of our water, what's it called, our aquifer, because how does the, nobody's ever shown me how the other aquifer butts up against our aquifer, because there's homes and wells right on the edge and they keep going. So building a house on an acre home would have the same requirements of me building it on my 50 by 125 lot. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Good evening, George Taylor, Los Osos. I'm here to enlist a little help from the CSD board in the fact that we, under the conditions that the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission has put on the wastewater project, they are making some very weak requests that the construction water not be used. I would like to see we get behind a push to make it mandatory that any construction water is not potable water out of our lower aquifer, because it's too easy for a construction crew to come in and slap a valve on a fire hydrant, and there goes our good water from down below, right out there to hold down the dust, to clean off the wheels, and to flush out the sewer pipes. I think that if you get behind it, I think that we can possibly make a difference in that if we all speak with the same voice and say, we don't want any of our potable water used anyway on this construction. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker for items, general public comment on items not on the agenda.
Leon Gold in Los Osos. Now, I know that before this started, we heard something about speaking about things over which you have jurisdiction. And I, you know, one can take a very narrow view of that, or one can look at it in a broad sense. And I want to talk to you about health care. And I'm talking to you as employers. You employ people. And as a matter of fact, as I understand it, you provide health care to your employees. If we had a single-payer system here in California, or better yet, in the entire United States, this district, as well as other small businesses, single-payer or the government option or whatever is the latest fancy word that gets attached to this, I hope everyone here knows what I'm talking about, in the sense that this would mean that we would be saying once and for all to the insurance industry, which has gouged us tremendously, has denied claims for people who should have had claims allowed, sometimes doing this 2 days, they will allow somebody a claim 2 days after they've died because they haven't gotten the service they should have gotten. You know, it seems to me that this is something which you could take a position on as a board and tell Lois Capps, who is our congressperson from this district, that you're in favor of either the government option or, this, better yet, the single payer. Could have a forum on this thing, as a matter of fact. I'm sure you could fill the hall with people interested in dialogue, not screaming at one another.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker. Like Mr. Weimer, I'm troubled by the statements that Director Kelly made at Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting. She started off by saying she didn't know where to begin, and then began to ramble about some hub and spoke wheel analogy that she'd learned in a philosophy class. She said she was happy to stand behind the board. I'm not sure what she's supporting. Oh, stand behind the board in support. I'm not sure what she was supporting. Was it the fatally flawed Tonini project, or that the board let the Public Works Department blow through $7 million chasing the fatally flawed project? Or was it just to stand behind and support, just to be supportive? I don't know. She went on to say that the distractions, I'm going to quote this, the distractions are being repackaged. And that seawater intrusion 30 years ago is the same as seawater intrusion today. I was here. Marshall was here. Frank was here, the Taylors were here 30 years ago, and seawater intrusion was detected at the sand spit. A couple of months ago, you said you were working for a developer doing some water conservation calculations, and if so, don't you have to disclose that to the public? I know when I did some work for a developer, I certainly had to disclose it, and I was while I was on the board. And then you are the ad hoc committee for affordability, and you also said that you would take a second job in order to keep your family here in Los Osos. Are you suggesting that our elderly, our disabled, our people who can't afford the sewer just get a second job, or maybe take a boarder in? Because I don't think that's fair. approach for affordability And then, by the way, when are we going to get a report from that committee? Your comments, Ms. Kelly, and your actions relevant to last month's discussion about harvest wells reveal your lack of understanding and your on the issues and your lack of history in Los Osos.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please. Okay. Yeah, if there's any speakers that don't, because otherwise I'm going to close it down, and we still have some time left. Any speakers now that want to wait till after the end of the last agenda item tonight? Well, you know what, the only thing is I would actually prefer you speak now because we might get to a point of continuing the meeting, and so if, actually, since we have the time, let's go ahead and do it now.
Trying to save you that time at the beginning for the agenda items. So, in the future, are we going to have the choice, or I'm just curious.
Can I? It was my understanding when I made the motion is we'd have 30 minutes at the beginning, and we would use those full 30 minutes. If people didn't get to speak in that 30 minutes, we would carry it over to the end. But the end wasn't happening automatically.
Okay. My understanding back when you made the motion was that it was to make it the accommodation for people who couldn't be here later to do it up front. But whatever, however you want to word it, I'm glad to have it at the front.
That's the way I interpret my motion. So.
Okay. Is that correct, Joe?
Well, I was just looking at the end, and it says it's reserved for speakers who did.
That have come forward. I find it kind of ironic, personally, for all of the complaining, all of the posturing, all of the attempts at lawsuits, all of the aggravation that has been brought to bear on past board members individually and collectively, that there's no appeal from Mr. LeGros. There's no appeal from Gordon Hensley that I know of at this point. There's no appeal from Taxpayers Watch. There's no appeal from Pandora. There's no appeal from Frank Freiler. On the project that it'd be 4 years now that we repeatedly heard was, in their estimation, the perfect project that would eventually end up getting built. And everybody would be shown to be wrong that was in the opposition, the Move to Sewer group, the Gravity versus Step group, which still is up in the air, I believe. The Broderson proponents for full disposal. All of those issues that were flaws or potential flaws in the old project that was supposedly perfect for location at Tri-W that have been changed, and location has now been changed for the second time, are not being appealed by the group that had the perfect project at almost 50% overbid originally. I was kind of stunned when I heard the list and who was on it. I don't think they're going away. I think the old board members are still going to bear the brunt of Taxpayer Watch in that group, but I do find it interesting that none of them were on that list. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Good evening. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos, and I'm going to ask some questions and make some statements in reference to the RAC meeting yesterday. And it has to do with several things. We have representatives from this board at the RAC meeting, and there was a discussion on the resource management levels and how they were to be used now on a 9-year basis. They were proposing to shorten that on one end and lengthen it on another. When this subject came up, the question was asked as to whether the severity level of severity 1, 2, and 3 was proper and adequate, and not one Not one, whether it be our second district representative or our CSD representative, called it to task as to extending the time for reviewing the severities. If we had had someone stand up and under CSA 9 and say we need some help because we were having a problem years ago, we would not be in the trouble that we are in right now. The second thing is when there was a request as to consideration of reconvening of the Los Osos Wastewater Project Subcommittee, unfortunately, those that were there did not want to, representing our community, wanted to have the subcommittee reinvigorated with what they were supposed to do. But fortunately, there was a, shall we call it, number of persons who felt that it should be addressed by the chairman, Mr. Nguyen. So what has happened is Mr. Nguyen is going to individually canvass the supervisors to find out if they want to have the subcommittee re-energized or whether they are on total, have a consensus that it will not. My point is, why were we not represented as having the Los Osos Wastewater Project Subcommittee re-energized?
Thank you for your comments. I'll allow one more speaker because we took some time on the in between, and then this will be the last speaker for general public comment now.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I wanted to kind of update the community a little bit about what's been going on with the wastewater project because we pretty much have very little news coming from the county or nothing in the Tribune that I ever see. So what is of major concern to me is that there is a formal complaint put in about the possibility of bid rigging and ag commissioners, all the environmental groups. It was also the Coastal Commission had major concerns and was not willing to accept the project as it was written up in the EIR. So what now comes to light is the fact that we have this complaint in that has taken over 4 months. I think it's 4 months and 3 weeks now that Warren Jensen has had this formal complaint listing documentation of Montgomery Watson Harza, who looks like they will probably be given the project again, and deals bid rigging and elimination of competition, et cetera, et cetera. And the complaint is basically been looked at, the first layer of the complaint was looked at, and comments were that there was nothing there. Yet the problem is the complaint is pretty serious, and there are much more documents there that support that. So why Warren Jensen is taking so long to come up with, if in fact Pava Ogren has dirtied this process, and the Montgomery Watson Harza and bid rigging, Carollo, Lou Carella, all the big players involved with this, if there's conflicts of interest and problems with bid rigging, the project completely stops and has to be reevaluated and be, you know, new people would have to come in and take it over. It's pretty serious that they continue going on with the project and the review while this formal complaint sits in the background. And I just think people need to understand that there's the saltwater intrusion is the most important thing. And I'm sorry that Maria Kelly seems to want to keep going with the nitrate thing because we're like 1 milligram over drinking standards in our upper aquifer, and that's not a serious problem. That's not polluting the way that it's been shown. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And so with that, we'll close general public comment for items not on the agenda. Vice President Ohilski.
If I could answer Frank's question, I'm not negotiating with the county, but I've discussed it with the county. Some of those documents are on the Los Osos Wastewater website. The other documents they are going to put on, but they obviously have other things they're dealing with right now. They've assured me that all the documents will be preserved, though, until the time that they do get electronic copies of them available. So I have discussed that with them, so that's taking place.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to proceed to the administrative and committee reports, starting with our district Cal Fire report. Oh, thank you.
Consisting of 60 firefighters from throughout the different departments in the county. We have 70 of our CAL FIRE inmate firefighters with their captains. Down in Southern California, we have about 30 overhead, two of our bulldozers, and assortment of other things that are down there engaged. These fires, of course, are very devastating that are down there. Some of them we're starting to pick up, and those resources should start home, we hope, some of them this weekend. Of course, we're all mourning the loss of the two L.A. County firefighters, and as you may have noticed, the flag at the South Bay Fire Station remains at half staff for that loss. Engine 215, one of your engines, is assigned to those fires currently with the staff from the Los Osos Station on it. For this last month, we had 86 calls. This goes back to July. We had 86 calls in July, and of those 86, 67 of them were medical calls, and 24 of those requiring advanced life support. Five incidents were fires, and 10 public service assists. We are moving forward on the purchasing of mobile data computers. These mobile data computers will be computers inside the cab of the fire engine and the chief officer vehicle, and they will be used for improving our response through providing automatically dispatch information and routing to the call using, you know, GPS technology. Station 15 had some difficulty with a couple land parcels that were involved in the weed abatement program, and they met with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the landowner, and those properties were exempted from the hazard abatement to protect the endangered species. There's still 20 lots that we're working on in getting into compliance. Maybe some of you have noticed that at Sunnyside School, we continue our effort of building our new South Bay Training Center. This two-classroom facility, or actually three if you count the computer lab, will be up and running for fall classes. The local businesses should enjoy seeing many firefighters taking their lunches breaks in the community, and so hopefully there'll be some rewards for the local businesses. And I'm available for any questions if the board has any.
Any questions from the board?
Thank you.
Thank you for coming tonight. The next item is going to be the
numbers, and the month of July there was 27.75 million gallons produced, which equates to an average flow rate of 895,000 gallons per day to meet the water supply demand. And then production for the month represented a decrease of about 0.25% from the time last year. The billing period for this cycle through August was June 11th through August 10th, and this represents 57% of the district. And the total consumption was 29,690,300 gallons. Now, this reflects a decrease of about 3.2% from last year's total. The revenues generated were total of $174,288.70. I wanted to let you know that we're in compliance with our monthly July CDH, our Department of Public Health report. And then also this month our crew is going to be out doing dead end flushing, and we just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention. So they may see some discoloring in the water, and if you notice it, what we're asking is that you first go to the faucet that's furthest from the water meter, and that would probably be at the back of the home, and just flush it for 2 to 3 minutes until it runs clear. And our wastewater operations, Vista de Oro, Bay Ridge Estates. Bay Ridge has a pump that's on the consent calendar. We've had some problems up there. And drainage has also got a pump that has, well, it's really an upgrade to the whole pump facility over there at 8th Street. So anyway, I'm here for any questions.
Director Cicina?
Do you have anything new on the South Bay Upper Aquifer and Lower Aquifer well situation? The Lower Aquifer well apparently was reading high in nitrates, and the thinking was that the Upper Aquifer well had been leaking down through the well shaft, and we were going to try flushing the lower well. I mean, has that been happening? Any improvement there?
We haven't got any labs back.
I want to report on what happened in the administrative area of the Los Osos CSD in August. First of all, I want to announce and just remind everyone that the directors began holding open office hours on Saturdays from 9 to 11 in Suite 102. And these hours have been posted in the Tribune on Channel 20 and via postcard handouts. Office hours will be done once a month, and the next scheduled one is September the 12th. We did research on replacing it to see if it was feasible or cost-effective, our photocopier, and it turned out not being as promising as we thought, so we will be keeping the photocopier we have at this time. The development of a records retention schedule has begun, and we will be ready to give this to the, or I should say I will be, the interim general manager in mid-October. We're combining the whole staff to do organizational ideas, and it's been a very valuable learning experience and proceeding very well. Thanks to one of our great employees for attentiveness to detail and noticing something that came into the front office. They received and passed on to me information from a sales representative concerning redoing all the overhead lighting in the facility. And basically what it consisted of was leaving the fixtures in, but taking out the old magnetic ballast, which hum and are not very bright, and the T12 fluorescent lighting tubes, replacing them and upgrading them with the more efficient electronic ballast, which do not hum, and they're much brighter now that it's complete, and it's T8 fluorescent tubes instead of the T12. We got this approved by our landlord. At first, he wasn't really keen on the idea, but after researching it and meeting with the sales rep, he did the whole building, every suite, at 2122 9th Street. It is totally paid for by PG&E. If you look at your PG&E bill, there's a line item. I don't recall what it is named, but I looked on our personal bill at home, and it's about $5 a month that we pay towards this. So the money is sitting in 2003 Ford Explorer and the 2001 Chevrolet Impala. Basically, we parked the vehicles, canceled the comp and collision insurance, and we received a refund check in the amount of $475, which was deposited on September 1st, 2009. And that concludes my report. Do you have any questions?
Director Cicina?
This might be more of a question for Mitch, but who drew the short straw on September 12th?
We did not get any plot.
You got mine. You should have. I said that would be fine that day.
Oh,
I could do it that day.
Or any other. I think Director Cicina got the short straw.
I got the short straw. Okay.
I think I replied.
I'm just trying to find
thank
out.
You for, thank
plan
you
my
for,
life.
Thank you for volunteering.
We can't have two directors as well. So, you know. Because I also replied. Okay. Next thing will be our general manager report. Mr. Cooney.
Okay. On your July meeting, you approved two supervisorial positions, and Sandy Wood and Margaret Faulkner, who you just had reports from, have really made a real impact on the operations of the district and on district morale. Some of the items that have been brought up have been very cost-effective as far as the district goes. One item, for an example, as far as the drainage on 8th Street, we were looking at a budget item of $20,000, which we put into the budget. But through hard work of Margaret and Travis, the utility foreman. We got that for a complete rework. We're looking at about $6,000 instead of the $20,000. The staff is working very hard on a records retention program. That's under Sandy Wood's domain. That's something that many districts and many organizations have a hard time with. This one's working out pretty well. Tonight we'll talk about the Bay Ridge Estates draining. Been working on that. Septic systems at Bay Ridge. We lost a pump. We've been using the Al's septic system to help keep it operating for us while we're getting the pump repaired and replaced. That'll be on tonight. That's tonight's consent agenda. Have heard nothing from Cabrillo Lighting from the Cabrillo Estates, as you know, that and Chuck Sneed. This has been a real joy of a committee to work with. These people are very knowledgeable. They bring a lot to the table, and I think that we're going to put together a rate system for the district, which will help us preclude the importation of outside water sources, and that's really one of the things we're working for. Also, there's a thing that the state of California has come up with called rate securitization. As you know, there's a potential that the state is coming up with a program to relieve all of the governmental entities, local governmental entities, counties, cities, and special districts of 8% of their revenue, tax revenue. And the League of California Cities and the California State Association of Counties have come together with a joint power agreement to basically sell bonds to cover this. And so, therefore, there may not be a reduction actually to the revenue stream that flows to each one of the local governmental agencies, counties, cities, or special districts if we choose to apply. The structure, timing, and application details of this program are still in development, so we really don't know what the final outcome is going to be. But that's something to keep in mind, and the deadline is coming up in November for this. So, any questions?
No questions. So, thank you, Mr. Cooney. Now we'll go to the director committee reports, and we have three included in the package. I guess Director Kelly, you want to start?
There's one missing.
Oh.
This is from the Water Advisory Committee on Wednesday, August 12th. I think everybody was present with one member not present. We started out the meeting with a brainstorming session looking at specifically the issues around conservation. We had three lists, challenges, what the challenges are facing the district, the ideas that we had to maybe address those challenges, and what outcomes we were looking for should we choose, you know, what should we choose to address the challenges. I'm typing them up and submit them back to the RAC in October. We'll do some prioritization as far as what outcomes we're looking for and what some of the ideas were that we had. The theme of half an hour, so we had a great list. We actually ended up with about six large sheets of paper. So I'll bring that back in November after the RAC takes a look at that, or after the WAC takes a look at it again and does some prioritization. We discussed the Urban Water Management Plan from 2000. The committee discussed some of the specific issues as it relates to our planning, the county eWorm and the MOU with the county, the ISJ process. And again, we discussed the fact that the committee is really looking for the district having a standalone conservation project separate from or in addition to the rest of our water management planning. And look at it as how we can do it without having to incur a lot of capital costs. And so that was a good discussion. Mitch is going to begin some informal discussions with the other purveyors as to what some shared conservation planning might be, probably mirror some of the stuff with the school district and things like that, I'm assuming. We'll hear back from Mitch. The committee agreed that there's no need to update the urban water management plan due to our population thresholds, but that the water master plan definitely, we're definitely you know, that's already been funded, and we really supported that. But in addition to the water master plan, we'd like to see a conservation plan be developed and implemented. We discussed the possibility of the county even coming and addressing the committee regarding the integrated water regional management plan and the status of that. And I'll give my update from the RAC on what the status of that was. And then Dominic and committee gave a subcommittee update. And they separated out the cost be allocated in three areas: free, low cost, high cost. There's obviously things that we would love to do. What type of investment would that take? So the subcommittee will come back to the WAC, and hopefully we'll all be coming back to the board with a full report in October or November with the rate structuring recommendations. And then at that point, we'll have to look at adopting our water rate study, which we've never done, and look at what sort of structure might work and what process we want to do to support the fact that we want to fund reserves and we have infrastructure needs. And so that's what the committee's been looking at. We took public comment. The next meeting agenda items were the CLEATH reports, and I did email the Keith Weimer and Loso Sustainability Group. I haven't heard back from him yet whether or not they'll be able to attend as part of the discussion. One more chance to meet, I believe, on the 12th or the 21st, and then they will be presenting on the agenda on the evening of the 23rd, the Water Advisory Committee meeting. So.
Just clarification, unless I'm wrong, I think our next subcommittee meeting is on the 18th.
Right. I'm not sure when the subcommittee. I know that the Water Advisory Committee was on the 23rd. I'm not sure when the subcommittee.
I believe the subcommittee was on the 18th.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And
you want me to?
Yeah. Go ahead and continue.
Okay.
The
other. Dominic's been doing an absolutely amazing job at moving this committee forward, and I really, really appreciate the work and time and energy that staff and the committee has been putting into it. And so, again, evaluating and discussing the adjustments to the budget. What is our budget? What's the practicality of our budget? What's future scenarios? With the goal being that we want to fund our infrastructures, we want to fund their reserves, and we want to fund a conservation program. Those are the three issues we really want to fund. How are we going to do that? So we'll be reviewing, they are reviewing, and I believe the full committee will also be, it's been recommended that they review the Napomo Conservation Plan, the standalone Cambria Conservation Plan, and we can learn a lot from what has worked well for them and what hasn't been working well. Look at their incentives, retrofits, the education programs, and how they historically have been able to implement their projects and what that may, whether we can mirror some of that or not, how effective we'll be. And then determine the revenue target needed to do all those things. The tiered rate structure, I could let Richard or Mitch talk more about this than I. Correct me if I'm not covering this accurately, please. They've also been looking at reviewing the summary and the historical consumptions for the district and evaluating the different scenarios, and specifically into if we lost the school district as an exterior customer, if they chose to go offline. They are our largest consumer, our largest customer, and what the financial impacts to the district might be if we just were a purveyor for interior water. And so that's pretty significant, and so we need to evaluate what that might look like and how that may or may not limit our ability to achieve our other water planning goals. And then looking at being able to develop a public facilities policy, should the district be able to stay online and be an exterior water consumer, that we may be able to develop some sort of public facilities policy that would allow them a different rate structure, and I believe is what is being explored. Am I correct? That's what we've been discussing. So this will be really short. There was a special RAC meeting on August 26th. They've been developing comments to the conservation open space element that's before the Planning Commission. It's been there in sections and chunks. And they needed to get what it's taken hours and hours and hours of going through the draft comments. Very interesting. And all I did was list out. There was a brief item on the San Miguel Ranch EIR, and that did come back before us yesterday, and those comments are being resubmitted to the Planning Commission. There's some real concerns about that final EIR on San Miguel, some real concerns about whether or not they've done their job in that EIR in regards to supply and mitigation. The conservation open space element, They covered everything that had anything to do with water and specifically policy and implementation. And I really appreciated the subcommittee's work that went into that. I just kind of listed it out, and they just commented on everything and did a very, very good job. It's really fascinating being in that large of a group of people with 17 to 20 people discussing comments and how that discussion goes. It's pretty interesting. I really enjoy being a part of that. So final comments, and I'll submit the report from yesterday at the next meeting, but they have submitted the San Miguel Ranch, and we are completed with our conservation open space element comments. And we have convened a subcommittee now to look at the county's draft stormwater ordinance, and I'm going to sit on that. And we did choose, I did pull the committee, we did choose to not reconvene the wastewater, Los Osos Wastewater Project subcommittee at this time. The committee didn't feel they had any additional information to offer a comment on. So,
thank you. And then the Vice President Hilsky.
Yes, Emergency Service Advisory Committee. Did you have a question, Chuck? Okay.
No, go ahead. I guess.
Emergency Services Advisory Committee met. And I have to apologize. There's no written report by the director because we did not decide how we were going to report till the meeting was at the end. So I couldn't go back in time and recreate my report. In the past, we've had minutes from Amy, who's done exact minutes of the meeting, and we had depended on that. It was a decision made by Mitch and the committee that we would not have detailed minutes anymore. We would go to committee reports like the other committees. And that plan will come back to the Emergency Services Advisory Committee at our meeting on 9/15, assuming that the advisory committee makes a recommendation at that point, then it will come to the board for approval at the October meeting, I believe. But anybody that's interested in the fire protection plan for the community, I would encourage them to come out to that meeting on the 15th, which will be at 5:30 at the fire station. I think Chuck and I both know that now very well. So we will be having that meeting on that. The second thing is we talked briefly about we are going to go ahead and start our strategic planning for the upcoming year, and we'll have our first strategic planning session on the 15th after we talk about the fire protection plan. The committee members were all given copies of the previous strategic plan and goal setting for the emergency services in the community. They'll be reviewing that, and then we'll take our first session and our first stab at our strategic planning. So the next emergency services meeting on the 15th will involve both the fire protection plan and the first meeting on the strategic plan. So there's a lot of opportunities for public input. Briefly on two ad hoc committees, the ad hoc circulation committee, which is Chuck and myself, we are going to arrange a meeting where Chuck and I go to the LOCAC traffic and circulation committee. I'm not quite sure when that's going to be, probably sometime the second week of September, to specifically talk about the concerns about the road closures and the road extensions. Right now we're trying to figure out a day that works for Chuck and I and the Traffic and Circulation Committee, and hopefully the chief can be there. So that's something that's coming up. And then lastly, the ad hoc fence committee. Talked to Ms. Vandeweer on the telephone on Tuesday. The low-effect HCP to remove the fence is coming along fairly well at this point. Since we're dealing with United States Fish and Wildlife Service, I can't give you really a projected time frame on the backside, but they've been very, very cooperative, and they understand our concerns to get that fence removed on a timely basis. So I hope that at the October meeting we'll have something definitive to report on that. That's it.
Thank you. I think Director Cini, you did have one question.
I do. First, I'd just get out of the way that I did not attend the last NEP meeting, and I don't believe we had an alternate stand-in there also.
Yeah, we tried all five.
The RAC. What was the RAC's position on the Public Works Department's project? The spray fields, Tonini spray fields.
The subcommittee?
Yes.
Temporary only. They didn't think that it was such a great idea.
Okay, now that that project has changed so much, I mean, with full ag exchange and reuse, and I mean, to the point where the ISJ tasks are being delayed because of studies that are going to be undertaken associated with wastewater project, isn't that reason to re-energize that subcommittee? Isn't there something to talk about?
I mean, I pulled the subcommittee. It was Environmental, Farm Bureau, myself. I can't think of who. Couple people by remote, Mike Wynn. Mike was going to go to the Board of Supervisors and ask them each individually whether they thought, I mean, our comments really were more to the planning stages of it, and I don't recall specifically, but we were supportive of tertiary treatment, full disposal within the basin, temporary use of spray fields, you know, as just specifically as it related to water. The RAC supported the Title 22 for broadleafy greens, you know, all those particular comments were made. Those wouldn't change. Mm-hmm. So where I see the comments really coming in next is more on ordinance and policy development versus water. So I'm not, and we didn't have, and that was one of the things that we had to take into consideration as a RAC. We don't have access to the ISJ. We could go review the CLEATH reports, right. But that RAC committee was specific in reviewing the EIR. So if they wanted to get a new subcommittee together to look at a different aspect of that, I could see that possibly happening, but that...
I guess I just see that EIR in such a fluid state right now that I'd like to make sure that subcommittee is ready to maybe be reconvened if at a moment's notice if they need to be.
If the RAC supported, it's not really up just to the subcommittee because we have to take a full vote
right. On
everybody, and there was no... My understanding is, and I wasn't there, and maybe Marshall can clarify, but my understanding is that nobody on the full RAC supported a reconvening of that committee. Even if the subcommittee had wanted to come back together, it required a vote from the RAC. Cool.
Well, it sounds like the project changed to be more in line with your recommendations anyway.
It actually
and
did.
And I just want to make sure it stays there and not retreats to the Tonini.
No, it would, there was a real strong... There was not a
CSD office. We didn't not have a meeting in August as well as July. Give Ampi some time as she's going to start working for the audit. And so again, that'll be Monday, September 21st. I did attend a training session offered by the California CSDA Association up at the East Bay Training Center on August 21st. That was a very beneficial workshop. This one was, there's four workshops they offer. Director Kelly went to, I think, the first of the series back in March. And this one was actually the last in the series, but since we are embarking on a general manager search, this related to that was the board's role in human resources, particularly in dealing with general manager issues and staff issues under his purview. So very beneficial. There was a good mix of board members, staff members, and general managers. So we had that back and forth and very two good presenters, facilitators. As part of that, there's an extensive package that I'm going to give to Mitch that can be available for review by the public or other board members at the front desk. We also got three sample templates for general manager evaluation forms that are distributed to the board so we can use for consideration for future general manager evaluation. One, in fact, we've actually used in the past, and which I thought was a very good form. And then on my written report, there was a group discussion, and I actually took the charts off the easel and provided them, transposed them, and provided them here in the package. It was very interesting in that at the start they asked for individual board member legacies, and if you read it, you'll see a lot in common. This came from all the members. You know, just state a few that I think reflect, you know, positions and goals of our individual board members. Including one which didn't come from me. I had one of these other ones was mine, but it was ensure the future supply of water. That was interesting coming out. Stability and tranquility, maintaining individuality of the district, instill long-term goals, and a number of others. But you see a lot of common threads from all the participants with our district here, so we share a lot of the same goals and have confront a lot of the same issues. So... And I would also encourage the other directors to get with Mitch and whether training in that format or others, you know, once every year or two is good and brings in different perspectives. And with that, comment on the administrative and committee reports and all the consent items A through J.
Just to start, before I get started, did you say you're going to be dealing with the consent agenda now? That's the right time? Okay.
Yeah.
May I respectfully suggest to the chair that if anybody's going to pull F, they ought to do it now and give Rob Lewin a chance to go home.
It's not pulled. It's not pulled.
Not pulling it, so it's going to be taken care of.
Yeah, the comment is on all the... thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please.
Martha Golden again. Maybe still. I have a question concerning the administrative report and the fluorescence. If PG&E has a program, and I don't understand the program at all, but assuming that if they do have such a program, and if that program is something that could be made available to homeowners who might have places for the kind of fluorescent fixtures that were reported on, I wonder if the CSD could work to get PG&E to make that available to our homeowners. I mean, if PG&E has given something away out of the generosity of its heart and probably charging all of us ratepayers for it, and there's some benefit that we can get out of it, I would urge the CSD to please look into that. And if, by chance, it is something that can be made available to the residents of Los Osos, please get right on it and help make it available. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I want to ask, is there any member of the public that's going to have a question for item F or a comment that Mr. Lewin might want to ask? Is there any member of the public that's going to want to ask a question regarding that? Could you raise your hand?
I have a question about that burn issue.
Okay. So would you mind, Frank, following Julie? Or Julie, would you mind switching with Frank then? And will you have a question, Mr. Marketson? For Rob?
Do you want me to continue on my other question?
Go ahead and continue and then, yeah.
Excuse me?
Continue on your list, yeah.
Okay. And the other issue is that, is there any projected cost for the ISJ on the ratepayers for the CSD? You call it, I guess, a revenue stream will be needed to fund the recommendations that are coming out of the ISJ. Has that been discussed? And if the school district does pull out, that would also bring, besides all the vacant lots that are on the east side compartment that can be built on and wells be added, that would be increase the number, if the school pulls out, the amount of private wells that are used in the basin. They'll outnumber for sure the amount of water being pumped out of this basin to any water purveyors. So that's something hopefully keep in mind when we're looking at a basin-wide plan to protect the basin, a conservation plan basin-wide. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Lewin, there was one question on, is there a projected burn-off?
Robert Lewin, Division Chief Cal Fire, certainly not an item for this part, I'm sure, but if you like, I can answer him privately, but if you're interested as well, I can go ahead. Yeah? We do put together what we refer to as prescribed burns every year. The closest prescribed burn we have to this area is going to hopefully occur during the window of November 15th and we'll say January 1st. That's a prescribed burn that we hope to do on the North Ranch of Pacific Gas and Electric property north of the power plant on the other side of Montana de Oro State Park's boundary line. In years to come, we hope to marry up another burn with that one on this side of the state park boundary line. We're currently talking and working out some maps and locations of a prescribed burn over there. We have done burns in the past, as the gentleman suggested, on the Silva property, just on the other side of the hills over here, above Los Sosos Valley Road. We are always looking for willing landowners that are interested in doing prescribed burns. They prove to be a good benefit, not just to, in a prevention standpoint, reducing the age class of the fuel so they're less volatile, but they also provide a better environmental a better environment for the habitat, because it allows for those seeds and things that are stored in the soils to finally have a chance to come back.
All consider purchasing the fence. We've paid for it a few times over already. We better buy it, and then maybe we can sell it at some surplus some other day. Maybe the county will need it for something, staging area or something as part of their project. Last month I was here and I asked about the jetting that was being done at Vista de Oro, and that clay was coming out, and I thought we'd get a report back this month, and that didn't happen. Yesterday I did attend the RAC. I was there at the beginning of the meeting while Ms. Kelly was mulling around the venue and speaking to other subcommittee members. The item on the agenda was consideration of reconvening the Los Sosos Wastewater Project Subcommittee in response to the outcome of the Planning Commission hearings. When the item came up, Ms. Kelly had already left. Mr. Ohilski came to fill her shoes. When Mr. Wynn, the chair, asked about the item, Ms. Fitzhugh, Joy Fitzhugh, the ag representative, said that Ms. Kelly had told them all that there was nothing new, so that it wasn't a meeting of the subcommittee that got together and decided there was nothing new. It was that Ms. Kelly said there was nothing new. And when I was there at the beginning of the meeting and saw the milling around, I overheard her say there was nothing new except maybe the cleath stuff. There's a lot that's new. That subcommittee should be asking questions about the new disposal plant. The environmental document does not look at that disposal plan. And each one of us should be scratching our heads and making sure that that disposal plan is going to work. The prior project had no buy-in, zero buy-in, no agreements with the school district on the use of treated effluent or harvest water. So the idea that the Planning Commission has, that they're just going to take it, is not necessarily so. That the farmers are willing to take it is not necessarily so. And I think that subcommittee would have been ideal for those questions to be asked. And
Mr. Asili, on the projected ISJ costs, do you have that at all, Mr. Cooney?
Yes, the budget contains the appropriation that the board approved for the our participation in the ISJ. There's 60,000. Pardon?
And just to say, Mr. Cooney is speaking. I ask everybody to please allow him.
There is $60,000 included in the budget that was approved by the board, and there's also $10,000 approved for the ISJ intertie management oversight.
Thank you, Mr. Cooney. The other second item was, do you have any update on the Vista de Oro? That was in the prior report. There was they had seen the clay coming, and was there any other update on that? It's still clay?
It's still clay.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So,
it's all clay pipe.
The clay pipe is just deteriorating.
Okay, next speaker, please.
My name is Keith Weimer, Los Sosos Sustainability Group. I want to tag on to that ISJ question. I'm not sure if I misunderstood Frank's question, but I thought it had more to do with what are the projected costs of some of the solutions they're recommending. So I'm curious about that. I'm also curious about whether there's going to be a cost-benefit analysis for different options, including the shifting option, because without that cost-benefit analysis, you don't know which is the best program to follow. I also wanted to clarify with Maria that when you're talking about developing the conservation plan for the CSD, we're only talking about half of the prohibition zone. That's about how much water use anyway. And then you did say that there's no money for that at this point, that's earmarked or that is available. Is that correct?
Go ahead and finish your comments.
Okay. Also wanted to point out that when it comes to the RAC, I would like to reiterate that that subcommittee did need to look at some things. There's a lot of changes. To say that the spray fields are still in the, in their recommendation is saying a heck of a lot, because there was a lot of testimony about the impacts of those spray fields on farmland. I mean, spray fields are not necessarily tertiary treated water, and they will have impacts in terms of salts and everything on that farmland. The Ag Commissioner representative was...
That more detailed analysis will wait till then, Mr. Cooney.
That is correct, unless they fall under that $60,000. The constraints of our partners are much greater than ours, since they have to take every one of their costs to the PUC, which is a three-year process for them. They don't have the capability of as quick a turnaround. So they're concerned with the finances as we are.
No. Next speaker, please, Ms. Taylor.
I would like to carry on just a little bit, Gwen Taylor, regarding the RAC meeting yesterday. Unfortunately, Mr. Garfinkel is the representative for the 2nd District, and he was also on the Wastewater Project Subcommittee. And it was unfortunate if he was, according to what Mr. Wynn said yesterday, he named off the people who sat on the subcommittee, and he named those who had been, shall we call it, willing or not willing to rejuvenate, reinstate, start up, whatever, the subcommittee again. But one of the things he did say, and it had to do with the ISJ Task 1 and Task 2. This was at the very end of the meeting, and when he tried to get the information out, there were very few people still remaining. He didn't even have a quorum. So I think that it is up in the air, and it's unfortunate that apparently the people who are representing the CSD are juggling so that nobody knows what is going on in the previous time. If Ms. Kelly's there in the beginning and Mr. Hohihilski comes in at the end, he doesn't know what's taken place at the beginning, and she can't talk to him and let him know what's been going on, because it happens fast and furious. They keep the meetings moving fast. They were started up at 1:30, and instead of leaving at 3:30, which they normally do, they extended it to 4 o'clock because there was so much on their plate. And they did not get to go through with the agenda item that was of the most important, and they themselves said that the time ran out. So the point being, we need to have somebody who's going to be there, who's going to hear it from beginning to end, and make a vote one way or another to the benefit of this community.
Thank you for your comment.
Please comment on the ad hoc committee. Been a lot of brainstorming in this committee. There is going to be a conservation component recommendation coming back. I think maybe we wait to pass judgment on until you hear it. At this point, just to put it out there, it would result in an increase, or not an increase, a per connection cost of 3 cents a day to eventually have a water conservation line item. We aren't the entire water district, and we're not in control of it. There are different parameters for the two major purveyors on how they accumulate revenue, but we have to start somewhere. So we're putting it out there. We're going to ask for input. We also would like people to, and I would hope that there'd be an agenda item on the water ops committee meeting about the rate study. And since finance hasn't met for, this will be now three full months when we meet again, I would hope that there'll be some discussion agenda item about the rate study and a line item for conservation so we can throw some numbers at you and see where we're at. I think that's where we're at, kind of, Mitch? Okay. There's not going to be an end-all, save-all to this situation, but we have to start somewhere, and that's what we're kind of proposing. I just want to ask another couple questions. The vehicle for the fire department is going to be replaced, finally. What's happening with the old vehicle? And then the other question is, looking at agenda item 5D, the reconciliation shows for the fire department shows a net surplus of $147,000. Where did that eventually end up? In what reserve account, or where's that being held? And that's it. Those are my only comments at this time.
Thank you for your comment. And Mr. Cooney, there are two questions there. Okay.
The first question will be, or the first answer is that the command vehicle will come back to the board to be declared surplus. We looked at trying to get it as one of the cash for clunkers, but unfortunately we're trading one high mileage vehicle for another high mileage vehicle, so it didn't work. Because the vehicle's worth about $4,500 as it stands right now. And it's starting to, you know, kind of eat us to death as far as costs go. That's why we put this on the agenda now, because, it's costing us money. And I'm sorry, I lost track of what the second question was.
The second was on the $147,000 net surplus, the reconciliation.
Okay, that has not been allocated this time. At any, as we have discussed before, any revenue in excess of expenditures at the end of the year will go into reserves for that particular department. That will come back. The Finance Committee will discuss that at their next meeting, and we will start making allocations for that. But that money right now has not been allocated to specific reserves.
Thank you, Mr. Cooney. Yeah, and again, I sent a note to Mr. Cooney about having that subcommittee, because I knew they were meeting on the 18th, that they could dovetail into the meetings in the next 2 weeks. So, so with that, do we have a motion? Oh, I'm sorry, that'll close public comment on the administrative and committee reports and consent items.
Do we need to move the consent items as well as this resolution to sell? Is it two separate?
No. You can do a resolution on consent.
I move we accept committee reports and consent items.
But it has to be a roll call.
Accept committee reports and approve the consent items. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Kudart?
Director Kelly?
Yes.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Cesenia?
Yes.
Vice President Ohilske?
Yes.
President Sparks?
Yes.
Thank you.
So the next item is going to be our only other general action item. Do any of the directors want to take a break before we start that 5 minutes? Are you ready to go? Okay, keep going. All right. Item A, which is submittal of a response to the Board of Supervisors concerning the Planning Commission's findings on the Los Osos Wastewater Project. And thanks for the, as staff leaves, well, thanks them after they've left.
I let them go home.
So, Mr. Cooney, can you introduce this item on item A?
Oh, yeah. I believe that Director Ohilske has some initial comments on this.
Yeah, I asked that this item be agendized since I had been representing the district at the Planning Commission hearings. And I felt that since the Board of Supervisors has this item scheduled for the 29th, that it was incumbent upon the district to make a response to the Planning Commission-approved project.
so that we could get our voice heard at the Board of Supervisors on the issues that were important to us. I worked with Mitch and with John, and what we did in preparing this letter, it shouldn't break any new ground over the previous positions of the board. What we tried to do is take the four letters that the board had sent to the Planning Commission, or pardon me, to the county regarding the project. The first letter was the letter that was developed prior to Mitch coming on board. It was developed by the committee, Chuck and myself, Rob Miller, John Seitz, and John Schempf at the time, which was comments on the original EIR. That was our first letter that we sent in. Subsequently, after that, we sent in a comment letter on the county proposed project. And then subsequent to that, Mr. Seitz sent in two letters regarding his concerns with Condition 97. So what we tried to do was take those four letters and combine them into one letter that reflected the consensus of the board up till that time, or up till this time, on those issues. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. I think the only one issue in here that doesn't reiterate our previous condition or our previous comments is the addressing of Condition 97 and 103. Mr. Seitz sent two letters concerning the return of the water to the district as being our primary concern. In our letter that we sent, and I can't remember the date off the top of my head, May 18th strikes me, but somewhere around that period of time, part of our concern was to make sure that all of the water got returned to the district. In the county's originally proposed project, that was not the case, as you know, because there were spray fields at Tanini, and there was really not a requirement to return it all to the district. Before the Planning Commission, we were quite insistent that even though there was Condition 97 in the project, that we felt there had to be stronger language mandating that the water come back to the basin. And that was part of the rationale for the county including, or pardon me, the Planning Commission including Condition 103. We still had a concern at the very end that 97 and 103, although complementary, the language was unclear as to where the water would be used and returned to. So John, Mitch, and myself came up with what would be a proposed combination of Condition 97 and 103 that we feel reflects the board's intent to bring all the water back to the basin, but also recognizes the fact that there is the ISJ adjudication out in the public that needs to be addressed, and we can't forget about that. So that was the one issue in here, is the proposed change to 97 and 103. I would also point out, in recognition of Mr. Taylor's comments prior during the initial public comment period, I do have a change I would suggest to address that, because I think it's the intent of the conditions, but having the approved project, or pardon me, the approval here, I can see where we can make a specific change to the language to incorporate that in. And after public comment, when we do other incorporations or discuss other issues, I'll bring that one forward. But that's pretty much it. So we'd like to get our comments on record. I mean, we have a number of options. One is the board itself could decide it doesn't want to send the letter. I mean, I agendized this because I wanted to make sure we had the opportunity to discuss it and get comments to the county in time to be included in the deliberations by the board. But we clearly could decide not to send the letter. We could send this letter, or we can make modifications to the letter. So that's pretty much where we are.
Thank you, Vice President Hilsky. As well, and following the Planning Commission hearings, I had some concerns as the Planning Commission developed. One thing that we all saw was that they wanted a stronger financial position on water conservation, which I'm supportive of. However, in watching how the proceedings unfolding and in looking at the closing comments where Mr. Waddell commented, I was concerned that although the intent was coming there to increase water conservation, the effect of benefit that would result was not going to happen. And so I had submitted separate comments to the Planning Commission, looked again at the load and flows, and looked at some of the basis for it, and felt that, there was an extreme amount of conservatism on the load and flows, B, that the benefits of water conservation, where if there's a belief in that and they're not and their goals, that won't necessarily translate into a cost reduction for the benefit of the homeowners in the prohibition zone. To that extent, I've provided alternate language that I would like the board to consider. And the purpose of that is that if we're going to be increase the cost for water conservation up front, that is the time to incorporate fully those conditions with conditions on the design specs of load and flows that then, in the design build process, translate to the savings for the prohibition zone property owners. Because frankly, I don't have a lot of belief in how it was constructed by the Planning Commission in concert with the county staff that $4 million is going to be any more than additional $4 million costs on the prohibition zone homeowners. And I think that's made pretty clear in the outline of my alternate language, and because it addresses both wastewater treatment design flows and affordability. And what I want to see come out of it is for county staff to be put to the fire for a commitment on I'm not going to say less conservative flows, but flows that factor in the full extent of water conservation as the condition is proposed by the Planning Commission. And those copies are in the back. They were given to the board members, as well as the comments I had sent to the board, Bruce Gibson, and the Planning Commission in August. And unless there's any other comments, I guess we could take public comment and then deliberate on the response afterwards. So, it should be in the back, right, Ms. Cooper? You don't want yours, Director Kelly?
I read it.
I'd like to just. My name is Keith Weimer.
Mr. Weimer, I haven't opened it yet.
Okay.
Did we? And so we've the copies were a bit back there. Okay. Okay. With that, we'll go ahead and take public comment. Go ahead.
Let me just ask a question first. When was this actually distributed? I downloaded the letter this morning and didn't see this. I'm talking about the language that Mr. Sparks was suggesting.
I didn't create a letter. I created proposed alternate language.
But it wasn't with what I was able to download this morning. So it really hasn't had public review for very long. It's pretty hard to look at the whole analysis and make some sort of comment on what that means. Am I going at this point?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just asking a question. Could you start my time again? Because I do have 3 minutes on this letter. Okay. There are three major problems with this letter. First, the affordability language undermines the conservation conditions the Planning Commission set. And the added language that Joe talks about is all negative. It just talks about problems with the conservation element. It doesn't suggest improvements. The Planning Commission added conservation conditions because the commissioners understood how important safe mitigation and stopping seawater intrusion are to having a viable project, and they understood the most cost-effective, surest, and fastest way to mitigate for the project and reduce seawater intrusion are to add a strong conservation element. The Coastal Commission and Water Board agree that a strong project conservation program is needed. The conditions provide for every home and business owner in the prohibition zone to get $1,000 for high-efficiency retrofits, new toilets, and front-loading washers, mainly, and the cost can be offset by grants. The CSD should be advocating for conservation grants. At the August 13 Planning Commission, Mr. Ohiski, on behalf of the CSD, said that conservation targeting more than a 20% savings would create a severe economic hardship for ratepayers. Research does not support this statement, and the CSD, in statements and actions, must be very careful not to undermine a funded conservation program unless it can guarantee a more certain, quicker, cost-effective plan to reduce seawater intrusion. The ISJ process cannot do that unless I'm missing something. The CSD plan only covers half of the prohibition zone, and it's not funded, and there are no experts doing a cost analysis. If the CSD is concerned about prohibition zone property owners bearing an undue portion of the cost for stopping seawater intrusion, it should join with LOCAC and the LOSG in support of a basin-wide plan. The reuse language in the letter is also flawed. It supports a priority list with Brodersen at the top when Brodersen is not the most effective strategy. We support the original language and the tech memo language. The CSD apparently still supports spray fields by supporting the rack position. Finally, the design flow language is flawed. Design flows are too high, so the project treatment facility will be larger than necessary. Mr. Ohilski said on August 13th, the flows were 68 gallons per day. In reality, they are less. In fact, earlier he reported that they were 63 gallons per day per person. The best thing for the CSD to do is to just toss this letter and have Mr. Ohilski and not have Mr. Ohilski or any CSD member attend the appeal hearing on behalf of the CSD. Maybe by the next meeting, this letter can be improved with some good input, and maybe the Board of Supervisors appeal process will go into next month. This letter harms my interest as a ratepayer and the interest of all ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Ohilski?
Keith, could I ask for clarification? Are you talking about the four-page letter or Joe's prepared or proposed changes?
I was talking about the whole letter, right. And I mentioned the three areas, being...
So you're talking about both documents.
Well, I'm confused.
I'm confused now, too.
Well, I assumed
this
we were...
This is not part of the letter. This is Joe's proposed changes to the letter.
I understand, but the conversation right now is regarding the letter, correct?
Correct. So you don't like the letter?
That's right.
Thank you.
And
that's
for the three reasons I said, conservation and the reuse and the flows.
Mr. Weimer, I just want to make one thing perfectly clear. You made the statement you think the design flow is too large. The design
right.
flows are too large, and you're referring to?
Well, I was referring to Mr. Ohilski's comments on August 13th. And at that time, he said that the CSD would support 68 gallons per person per day.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Next speaker, please.
Julie Tacker. I would have to say that the letter's too vague and that there's more to talk about. Just a quick clarification. I thought the Planning Commission thought that because they freed up the $7 million that was going to Tonini, gave them some money to reallocate for conservation. And if I'm mistaken, please correct me. What I think the letter needs to talk about more is what's going on from the purveyor's point of view and what's been happening with Task 1 and Task 2 of the ISJ work. Supervisor Gibson's been up and down the state suggesting that we can balance our basin on the upper aquifer and from the conclusions that are in Task 1. That Task 1 nor Task 2 has been peer-reviewed. It hasn't been in any committee. It hasn't been at the RAC. It hasn't been anywhere. It hasn't been back to this community for a discussion. Task 1, again, relies on the upper aquifer for balancing the basin. And you had a small report earlier tonight about the upper aquifer blending station at the South Bay Well. That project was years in design, development, permitting, probably $200,000 to fund that. And it's on hold because it doesn't work. That's a mechanical problem. So we can't just turn on the upper aquifer. Task 1 further omits any reference to the seawater intrusion study of 2005 that shows that the upper aquifer is vulnerable to seawater intrusion, nor does it mention the characterization study done in 2006 that identifies emerging contaminants in the upper aquifer. Those are things we don't want to drink. So I think the district needs to let the Board of Supervisors know that the tasks have not been evaluated and that not necessarily is the are the purveyors going to be able to pick up some deferred mitigation from their project.
Thank you for your comments. The next speaker, please.
Frank Salio, Los Osos. Due to some new information at the LOCAC meeting, unfortunately there wasn't a representative there. Supervisor Gibson, people asked about the review of the retrofit program which affects conservation. In that response from Supervisor Gibson, and if I'm saying it incorrectly, hopefully somebody will correct me, that there won't be a review. There's supposed to be a review after 1 year of that program to see the effectiveness and see how, you know, how it is actually working. He said that that won't happen. It may be 6 months, maybe a year. If you reviewed, it looks like some of you have reviewed the tape of that. I think that would be something included in the letter because that's part of conservation. And to put in there that you request that a review be held regarding that, the retrofit program for Los Osos, as soon, you know, not wait 6 months, but within the next couple of months. Because that's a strong component of conservation that the county kind of touts on that. Also, I would like to see, as LOCAC has recommended, not in a formal way so far, but they have agreed that they've considered a moratorium on the basin until this issue of the water is resolved in some way, either through the ISJ or through the county, through the wastewater project, that they have a better handle on the information that's being provided by consultants and others. So I'd like to see that you would consider putting, you know, that a moratorium would be beneficial to the community. Not only would that help get everything settled down, but now you're bringing in a lot of people who would not be brought into the issue of the seawater intrusion and would have a vested interest in having that issue resolved. Right now, there's a number of people who do not have a vested interest to have seawater intrusion resolved because they feel it doesn't affect them. This way, it affects everybody in the basin. Just not those of us in the prohibition zone. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Vice President Hilsky.
Frank, you mentioned about the one-year review. You're talking of the conservation measures? I'm not sure what you were talking about.
In, when they put together the retrofit program for, right. You know, when you're building a home that you have so many times. That's right.
Next speaker, please.
Martha Golden. I was a little bit, well, a lot disappointed when I saw the proposed letter and read it today. Just a couple of comments about it. First, with respect to the concept of the overall concept of affordability, as we know, as currently proposed, there's nothing affordable about the project, nothing at all. In fact, the money that has been voted by the Prohibition Zone doesn't come near covering the cost of the project, and who knows, and that's just for the capital costs of the project. So I was very disappointed, and I just want to point out that Golden State has commented on as follows. Because the county fails to set forth an accurate project description, a meaningful alternatives analysis is impossible. Because the DEIR does not provide a stable project description to which alternatives can be compared, the alternatives, in quotes, presented in the DEIR are nothing more akin to a series of proposed projects rather than the means to compare the worth and value of alternatives to a proposed project. Golden State is not usually concerned about the pocketbook of the ratepayers. It's very concerned about its own pocketbook, but the CSD should be concerned about the cost to the ratepayers of this enormous project, and yet it says very little, if anything at all, really, about affordability in strong terms in the letter. Second, with respect to seawater intrusion, again, the letter is extremely weak. It was appalling to me, the comments of Ms. Kelly at the board concerning same old, same old. I just want to say to the people out in this community that they ought to bear in mind water, water everywhere. We have an aquifer upper, lower, and lower, lower, yet not a drop to drink because salt water is not drinkable. It's a pollutant. It is a poison. It is corrosive. It will wreck the project if we don't stop saltwater intrusion. And yet, this letter just sort of shines it on, folks. It's nowhere near what we have to say about a conservation element, stopping seawater intrusion, and the proposed language that apparently is Joe's proposed language weakens that limited statement even further.
Thank you. And I would encourage people to read my amendments and really think about them because it doesn't weaken it.
Richard Margetson. Wow, Joe, I didn't know we were on the same page on this flow analysis. We should have teamed up a long time ago. I do have some questions about the analysis that you left on the back table. You have in here, well, let me state, first of all, the Planning Commission came up with condition one that set the per capita consumption at 50 gallons. And Rob Miller has stated publicly that the build-out population will be 17,800. Multiplying those through, you're at less than 900,000 gallons per day flow, okay? And that's one of the reasons I didn't appeal. I'm fine with that. I've proven my 200,000 to 300,000. But in your analysis here, you have this comment about the using this assumption and the total build-out connections of 4,770 versus 2,750 for the CSD. The 2,750 is the number of meters. If we're going by the number of meters in the prohibition zone, the numbers, if that's in your analysis, and I don't know, the number is going to be significantly higher than 4,770 because Golden State has more meters than we do. So we're well over 6,000 meters because when you're talking about connections, mobile home park, most of them will have either one or two connections to the project, but Morrow Shores, for example, has 164 meters, and they're in Golden State. So, you know, I think I'm just curious how you got to the build-out population of 14,738. I think it's way off. But and then there's also I think you put in here the assumption that it's 3.1 people. Persons per household in the CSD. That may be correct, but I know that Golden State's is lower than that. And you got to keep in mind for Golden State, of their service area, they include the four mobile home parks. And the average population per household in the mobile homes parks is 1.5 persons. There was a study done a long time ago, and it came out almost exactly to 1.5. So I think you're on the right track. I was just curious about some of the assumptions.
Thank you for your comments. So, any other director comments? I'll start again on my the data I took was coming from the county in terms of the connections. So the concern I had was on the, as Mr. Markinson said, was on the initial base, the population, my point, my alternate language, it was that the population assumption to begin with may not be accurate. In the end, it may not be accurate. And so the total flows in the CSD district, when you use that, and basing that at the 3.1, if you look at the incremental, what you do know is that at build-out, you do know the extra connections you're going to have. And so by using the county's analysis to get the 18,000 people, you'd have an extraordinary number of persons per connection. And that's what was pointed out there. And that was the basis for saying that their load and flows analysis was flawed. And I certainly would not expect them to use my analysis. The intent was, and I'm not telling them to use that in here, the intent was to go back and look at the connections since build out, look at their baseline, and look at the load and flows, and factor in, if you're going to charge the prohibition zone property owners additional $4 million, and I have no problem with that fundamentally, but if you're going to do that, then you owe it to the prohibition zone homeowners to go back and look at your load and flows and make sure you haven't severely over-designed. Because if you're going to add $4 million in costs, make sure your design specs going out at the beginning are not overstated. Because if you don't do it at the beginning, and the opportunity is now, if you don't do it at the beginning, you're not going to realize that cost savings on your design of your plant and your system. And I know many people may look at that language as being negative, but it's not. I'm not assuming county is going to use those, but I think the load and flows is flawed, and I think the Planning Commission had a good intent, but I think it was somewhat dysfunctional with county staff. And at the very end, Mr. Riddell said they're not going to, basically, the peak flows are the peak flows. And those peak flows, if you look in the load and tech memos, are based on multipliers for the average flow. So if your average flows go down, your peak flows are going to go down as well. And again, I'm not trying to, what I'm asking is, if I as a prohibition zone homeowner, if we as the LOCSD, as someone who has assessed ourselves, are going to have a cost increase, I want to see the benefit. And I didn't see that other part of it being executed between the Planning Commission and county staff. And frankly, if it's not executed, frankly, I don't want to be charged the extra $4 million. Ms. Tacker brought up the fact that they thought they freed up money. They also did make more specific recommendations on reuse, but we don't know what the cost of those going to be up to. So to say, hey, you're going to get $7 million, we're going to use it over here, I think was a flawed rationale by the Planning Commission. I don't support the letter we have because, frankly, I think the $4 million isn't going to translate into cost savings at the bottom line. And so I want to see alternate language. It doesn't have to be the specific language I have. I'm sure it would offend some. But our concerns on, we did have a section in there, our wastewater treatment design flows and on affordability, and my comments were to affect real affordability and make sure at the front end that if there's a cost increase for water conservation, it's going to result in water conservation. It's going to be incentivized up front. Because frankly, if it's not, all we're doing is the prohibition zone homeowners affecting more cost for conservation, and the only beneficiaries I see are going to be the vacant property owners in the back end. And so people may disagree with that. People may not. But frankly, then, if that's the case, I don't want the cost increase for water conservation without upfront benefits.
Well,
Director Sennett.
I can see the rationale for that. And I.
Oh, I'm sorry. We had additional public comment. Mr. Barrow. I didn't see any additional. I'm sorry. I didn't see any additional speakers. Yeah.
I don't really have my drawing completed. Can somebody help me with this, please?
Yeah. This is his time. He can take it as soon as he speaks. He's
Okay, yeah, go ahead. I didn't formally close it, so.
I've got to draw on it. Okay. Can you see this now? Is it on camera? Would you get it on camera, please? Okay.
Yeah,
Can you get this?
Okay.
Can you see everything right here? This is the sand spit over here, okay? This is the sand spit. This is grade, or basically what water would be at, water level. This is the end of our aquifer. And this is the bottom basement rock, the Franciscan Formation. And this is the upper aquifer. I just want you to have a perspective here, because the information that's in the saltwater intrusion report does not seem correct at all. If you look at the seawater intrusion, this is the library well. The seawater intrusion has come down into this area here for these two levels of aquifer, right around this area right here. So what we're looking at is, this is supposed to be 240,000 acre feet of water in this section right here. There's no way that can be. When this section right here is supposed to be 540 acre feet of water. If you look at the seawater intrusion, this whole section is gone. You can't pump out of that section anymore. If you look at the volume, what's left over right here, it's pretty small compared. So Joe, I think you need to really rethink your thoughts on water supply. And Maria, I really think you need to think about this. If we have intrusion all the way through this lower, bigger aquifer, this thick, okay, and we have this much left, this is our storage compartment. We only have about 3 million gallons of storage in our water system right now with the water tanks we have, or less. Tascadero has 90 million for about 5,000 more people. 90 million gallons of storage. Okay, they are spread out over a wider area. But this is over like 7 to 10 square miles. So if you look at this number here, and you see, well, this is the polluted aquifer. Polluted. This is polluted right up here. And this is what our new water supply is going to be, the one that's supposedly polluted by our septic tanks. So what we have left, I'm sorry, is our time up?
Yeah, and you finish your last sentence.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Would you like to have a copy of that? Thank you.
Vice President.
Public comments closed now.
And closing public comments.
I'd just like to respond to a couple of comments that were made, and I think there's a couple of misconceptions.
Have you had your comment?
Thank you.
Why did
you cut off? Is public comments closed?
What?
Okay, I'll go ahead and allow one more public comment since I thought I'd stated I was and close it after that last speaker. So
I can talk not to push people out of the way, so I guess I better learn something new.
Go ahead, Ms. Taylor.
My name is Gwen Taylor, and I keep listening to this meter count, and there are no meters in Sunset Terrace. How are you adjusting the meter counts to correspond with what you're suggesting? If there are 200 residents in Sunset Terrace and there are no counts of those meters, because there are no meters, how are you adjusting that in your count? Please think of that.
Okay, in
our direct comments.
comments are closed.
Thank you.
Second time.
Just a couple comments, some things that I think I need to clarify here. First of all, in the Planning Commission's approval and consideration of the project, there are no design load flows at all. They're not included in this project. There was a statement made that I said that the design flows were 68 gallons per day. That's incorrect. The statement was that the consumption was 68 gallons per day, not that the design flows or the loads. That was not discussed. In fact, Mr. Waddell, at the end of the last hearing, clarified that that would only be taken into account during the design build process and when the engineering occurred. So there are no defined figures for design load flow for the wastewater project. Also, you know, when I spoke on behalf of the district, I didn't say that it would have negative financial impacts on the district. I just said I didn't know because we hadn't analyzed the impacts and that it could have financial impacts on the district. But nobody knows to this date what the financial implications are. Quite frankly, before we started talking with the school district about them going offline, we didn't know whether what the financial implications of them going offline would be. That's something that has to be looked at. So, you know, I just want to correct those two things. There are no design load flows in the approval in any way, shape, or form. And what the financial implications are is yet to be seen of the water conservation program. Before we get into discussion, I'd like to ask even if the board wants to send a letter, because we may not need to discuss the details of the letter.
I have some major problems with some sections in it. In keeping with some of the things we heard from the audience, I think that we undermine conservation with our comments on affordability, and I would like to take out most of what your letter had and especially not include what Joe's had. I think it just undermines the conservation. I think it's critical that that be a part of the project. And in fact, in the front of the letter, we talk about we'll address the current significant groundwater issue. So if we're not dealing with conservation and saltwater intrusion, we haven't dealt with the significant groundwater issues because they're not nitrates. So I don't like the affordability section after the sentence that talks about any conditions and mitigation measures must be specific to impacts created by the project. I just think it's a water situation and it should all be, we should attempt to resolve as much of it we can with the project. It's going to be our only, our biggest chance to do that.
I don't think that was the intent of that sentence, but I understand how it could be read that way.
Mm-hmm. There are just too many things. The next couple of sentences, project must not be viewed as an opportunity to attach non-related costs. I think saltwater intrusion and conservation is related to the problems that we have. And again, use of the word prioritized, I guess, down in reuse priorities, and then Broderson at the top, that almost says, yeah, that's your top priority, and I just don't agree with that. I kind of like Joe's suggested amendments to the treatment design flows, except for the fiscal year 05-05 typo, but yeah, that's pretty minor. I guess if $4 million for conservation is such a big deal, why aren't we trying to save 20% or up to $20 million on collection systems and other things that are big ticket cost items? So if we're going to send something to them, I guess I'd like to take on the whole darn project like I did with my appeal.
Director Samet?
I think your issue over the $4 million expense for conservation could also be applied to bringing the water back to the basin. There are undetermined additional costs for that. And furthermore, they'll be returned, for the most part, to the upper aquifer, which is now being looked at as suspect or costly to reuse. I think with regard to the project taking on costs for conservation and water reuse especially, it's a district-wide and basin-wide issue. And even the properties outside the prohibition zone are integrally involved in this. They derive water from the water basin and yet don't return it. And then furthermore, aren't responsible for the cost of bringing the water back, treating it, reusing it, and all those other uncertain obligations that we're piling onto the project. So I think, you know, the clamor for urgency is certainly justified, but I think it's district-wide, and I think it should be approached from that perspective. It's beyond the scope of this letter and beyond the scope of the project, but I think we have to look for the immediate, the long range and the permanent solution, and that is an immediate. It's an urgency, and conservation has to be attacked across the whole district. And that's going to require a 218 vote, I feel, to enact a comprehensive solution. We're going to have to pay for conservation somehow. We need to get a grant writer. We need to have a program to fund retrofits. You know, if you rely on future development to pay for retrofits, your payback is somewhat uncertain. But I think those are the things we have to look at. And, you know, I'm really up in the air as far as the project paying for water reuse and bringing it back. It's uncertain. This letter doesn't even address the county's last letter to us. It said, you know, you're going to have to use it all on spray fields because you can't bring it back. Department of Health won't let you use it again. This is very disturbing, and we've glossed over it. I think, you know, our technical report should address that and resolve the problem once and for all, because this is a big issue. There's a lot of costs associated with it. It plagued the last project, disposal versus reuse. It was never fully developed, and it has always been attacked by the strategy of let's get the wastewater project going, we'll worry about the return flows later. And I think we still got that hurdle to jump over. We've got half the system. The other half is still left in the air. I don't know if we can reasonably comment on it. It's frustrating.
Director Kelly.
I think the letter, I mean, the affordability language hasn't changed. Ironically, how we're perceiving it has changed based on now that the Planning Commission hearings have happened. This was our original language prior to the Planning Commission, and now we're all taking issue with it. But at the time, we really supported it because we were concerned about fish and wildlife and fish and game and all the other, you know, attachments having, you know, these expectations. It really, you know, just, you know, so the Planning Commission's response has kind of changed how we're perceiving our own language. And I actually, I mean, I still like the letter because I think it sticks to the district's role, which is, as, you know, potential future, you know, operator, and just what is our role to comment on right now. We're not a part of the design. We are a purveyor that will hopefully be taking, you know, the return flows. We want it. We've made our policy statements. I think we need to keep in mind what our actual role in the relationship right now is, just commenting on the project. I think it's important to have some comments. I understand, you know, from a technical aspect, we may not all agree or may not all understand, but do we or do we not want to, as a board, at least have some policy considerations before the Board of Supervisors as a water purveyor? And that's really the scope of our comments. That's what I feel like the scope of our comments are. You know, in regards to, you know, the irony when I hear people say, you know, talk about seawater intrusion, the irony of that we have seawater intrusion of our lower aquifer is because we've overpumped it, because we took our upper aquifer offline, and because we didn't pay attention to what we were doing, you know. But that's not an excuse to not move on with the project, and I don't think this is where we debate the issue. That's our responsibility to, you know, to deal with that. I I've heard people throw around the seawater intrusion as a reason to not do the project, to be fully analyzed, to know. You know, this is just, we're just talking about our role as a purveyor. And so I do support the letter. There's a couple of little, you know, tidying up, but I'd like the board to have our comments on it. But I would, you know, if we don't want to send it, I'd like to be able to have that decision before we get too much into the details.
Vice President Lihilski, there, what, you had a question on correction on tech and load flows from the views of the Planning Commission. What was your correction?
The Planning Commission approval did not include load flows.
Right. That's correct.
That was the statement that I made.
Right.
It wasn't its role. That was it. There was no question. It was just a comment. I mean, I agree. You know, I'd like to see us send a letter, and I'm more than prepared to look at some changes to the letter. But if the board, I think we need to go on record, and, you know, but that's just the way it is. I mean, some of the things that are being said, I don't think jive with the letter. I mean, the letter says disposal shall be prioritized to reduce seawater intrusion. I mean, I don't know, but yet we're said there's not a strong statement about that. And I think that to address Steve's comment, you know, I think what we're saying is we want to have the water returned to the basin. We're not talking about recharge or disposal. Our position, it needs to be returned to the basin. You know, and I appreciate Chuck's comment. And maybe in our language for 9703, you know, to address the Brodersen issue, maybe we just say disposal of treatable effluent shall be reserved for the following uses and not talk about priorities. But that's really nitpicking the content of the letter. I think we just need to decide if we want to have an input into the process or not. And that's pretty much it. Because I have other suggested changes that I think address concerns. But
so I guess I want to ask you, the Planning Commission, not having load and flows, but they had specifics on water conservation, so you're comfortable with them assigning a specific value on water conservation, and they had specifics.
The Planning Commission findings assigned 50 gallons per day interior use as the goal of the water conservation. That's what they did.
And do you believe that's achievable as a result of the $4 million? And if so, no. Okay, no, just a second, Director Kelly.
I'm
addressing Vice President Hilsky. And if so, why would you not want that to translate in appropriate design flows for the project? If you're going to be asked to pay that money, which the Planning Commission was asking to be imposed on the project.
The conditions, the way they're written by the Planning Commission and relative to the $4 million, that how the water conservation money is going to be expended will be determined by water conservation measures in the future. I think that the 50 gallons per day is achievable. Yes, is the $4 million enough to get there? Certainly not. There's going to take additional expenditures to get to 50 gallons per day. Whether that's through additional expenditures, whether through additional retrofits, whether it's through increases in rates, I don't know how you get there, but 50 is achievable. The $4 million was not an issue that I just don't. I understand where you're coming from, quite frankly, you know, but I just don't think that that's part of what needs to be addressed at this point. The Planning Commission approval is a policy statement, not an engineering statement, and I'm not prepared personally to get into trying to engineer the project.
And I wouldn't either, except the Planning Commission got into engineering the project, and by doing so and adding cost, I think they then have a responsibility as a condition to make sure the design is appropriate. And your key word was in the future. And so if you're designing something for in the future, you have to have a way of ensuring you want to realize that up front. Because if you don't realize that up front, and I don't know the mechanism necessary for doing that, but when Mr. Waddell stated the flows aren't going to decrease, there's a disconnect either between, and it's not our board, it's between the Planning Commission and county staff. And so I don't want to sit idly by, have a cost increase, because basically I don't believe it's going to affect anything positive unless it's done up front. And how we would affect that in our response, that's what I intended there. But that's how the board...
I totally agree with your intent. I just don't see that it's feasible to do at this point.
It's the Planning Commissioner, Board of Supervisors. They're both going to be listening and making decisions, right. The Board of Supervisors now.
I don't think this is the final time we will be commenting. I mean, I'd like to leave the door open so that we can continue to comment on the process as it goes along. I want to continue to be a part of the process. I'm just looking at where we are right now, that what are our statements appropriate and germane, and if we want to add design flows and people want to head that direction, I'm totally supportive of it. But this isn't the final time. You know, hopefully we'll have additional opportunities when they get towards the design point to continue to comment on it. So I think the intent of this letter was just to recapture our previous statements up to the point of the Planning Commission and commenting on the project, and that there will be future comments.
If we want to proceed forward with the letter, I mean, like I said, I have no problem with removing prioritized from condition 97-103. Quite frankly, I have no problem with removing the second the two sentences in affordability. I think we should leave the last one there. because I agree with Director Kelly when she says this is the same condition we had before, but our perception of it has changed.
I agree with that totally.
Yes.
I remember this language,
right,
and what we went through to get it in there. And now that I think about, you know, water conservation as the main factor it affects.
But, you know, I think if we take out the sentence that starts any condition measures and then the next sentence, the cost, but leave that last sentence in, which is the project must not be viewed as an opportunity to attach non-related costs to the project at the expense of property owners within the prohibition zone.
I can do that because
I think that addresses the concern. Because I don't want to, you know, we don't want to get burdened with Fish and Wildlife deciding we have to repopulate the snail population of the
world.
Yeah,
but water conservation is related. I could live with that.
And I think, I mean, if we can agree, and I have a proposed change to address George's condition if we want to go there, but, you know, I really, quite frankly, think if we want to use Joe's language in lieu of the language that's in the letter, I don't have a problem with that, but I would like to suggest some changes in that specific language because there are some minor concerns I have. The affordability, I would prefer that we do what we just discussed now in lieu of trying to address the $4 million in Joe's language. I mean,
I'm in total agreement with everything you've just said, and I do think it would be important to work a little phrase in about Mr. Taylor's concern, because we don't want our drinking water keeping the dust
down.
Well,
right now there's Condition 111 that talks about non-potable water being used to flush lines, and there's Condition 76B that says...
Your suggestions for Joe's
water,
flows and loads...
It's waste treatment design flows is the issue.
Why don't we just go through section by section if we want to try to edit it?
Okay.
I mean, we'd like to take a stab at editing it tonight. So we can go through each section, and then, Marshall, why don't you lead in terms of alternate? I mean, I've got specific alternate language, and you can comment on that. But let's go first to the introduction, you know, where you'd want to
There should be a semicolon after Gibson. There should be a semicolon after Gibson. In the third paragraph of the introduction, there should be a semicolon after the word "the following." There's a missing space between potable water service and zone A.
Wait. Where are you at?
Item A, under A.
Under introduction, the third paragraph, item A.
You lost me at semicolon.
There should be a space between water service and zone A. And then under B, there's those two hyphens there. That should be, say, Exhibit B rather than two hyphens. I don't know how that happened. Well, actually, I do. And then affordability is the first substantive paragraph. What I would suggest based on the conversation is we delete the sentence that reads, any conditions and mitigation measures must be specific to the impacts created by the project. And the following sentence, which says the cost of any features above the minimum requirements of the Regional Water Quality Control Board must be borne by all users of the groundwater basin. Not that we disagree with what it's stating here, but based on the new perception of how this is being interpreted or perceived, and then we leave the last sentence in.
May I make a suggestion?
Yes, sir.
That as you go through this, you just take a straw vote as you go through each section. That way people are going to know where the board is, as opposed to then voting on the whole thing at one time.
Well, I would suggest that we delete those two sentences from the affordability paragraph.
So sentence number 3 and sentence number 4.
Yes.
Correct. Where is that? Yes, in the second line, the word prohibition should be prohibition.
Not plural.
Singular rather than plural.
So let me ask a question. Do you see seawater, additional seawater intrusion, mitigation?
In there.
And so that's the substance of what you want on affordability?
No, I want that to remain. I'm taking the two prior to
right. Okay. And you don't want any of my language?
Not on affordability.
Okay. Yeah, I would not agree. I would not agree with that because I think the question comes in terms of, you know, why don't we have $10 million versus water conservation?
you know, we've had this.
I know. I'm just going
to. So is that a 4-1 vote or a 3-2 vote?
Yeah. I don't know.
And I guess since we haven't voted on this yet, I would like to. I mean, I would like to have my language inserted because I believe it's going to force the county to look at the benefit of what they're doing by adding the cost and to go back and look at the loads and flows up front.
And I don't see it as being tied to loads and flows and more look at the fact of it's a water supply issue and the cost of future water supply development. I mean, so you look at it one way, I look at the other. I just don't think this is an appropriate place for loads and flows.
No. And I guess the only thing I would offer is, you know, it's $4 million that I don't believe is going to reduce cost and provide an affordability benefit the way it's structured and the way the Planning Commission is putting it back to the county. So that's why I would not support it.
How it supports affordability is that there are people out there that cannot afford to retrofit their homes. And that's, I mean, you want to look at it like that. That's a reality. I mean, yes, okay, I did it up front. But there are people out there that haven't taken the time to trade out their toilets or make the investment into a new washing machine because they can't afford it. And the project actually, you know, if and when this goes through, it actually does address affordability concerns. So, I mean, I can twist it that way, too.
Oh, that's true. But if they don't pay $4 million, they don't pay a dollar. So, in any case, I think, Mr. Vice President Hilsky, what you have is the deletion of those two sentences, and that's what you want to set forth right now for approval. And so I guess, Mr. Seitz, should we take a vote or just see if there's any objection and then go on? I don't know that we want to vote on every.
Sort of keep in mind what I'm thinking here is a straw vote, not the final vote on the letter. So I think that the President could ask the entire board is whether or not there's three votes to support those edits.
This is a change from our original language in the letter. At this point, under this paragraph, if we're agreeable to it, I would propose that we add, and I'll just read it briefly, I would propose that we add a new paragraph to this, which would say, the district proposes the following change to condition 76. Reclaimed non-potable water shall be used whenever possible. And then... the sentence right now says reclaimed non-potable water should be used wherever possible. What I would propose is we change that to reclaimed non-potable water shall be used. In the event of an emergency situation, non-potable water may be used if potable water may be used if non-potable water is determined to be infeasible. But that's only in an emergency situation. That refers to condition 111. So we take the same language for 111, which 111 talks about flushing of the lines, and we would use that same language for construction. So that's I propose that we add that to sustainability because it talks about using non-potable water. I would just add a new sentence. Well, we could add it there, too.
That was my question. Didn't it seem to fit
fine.
There?
I'm doing this on the
fly. Hold that thought, Vice President Hilsky.
I'll move that to
there. So then is the only change on sustainability the period at the end, after priority?
Okay.
Do we need a straw vote on a period?
I'm fine with that.
Okay, let's go to reuse priorities.
Okay, under reuse priorities, this, and I think Mr. Seitz may want, if you want to, John, discuss a little bit about the problems that was concurrent with 97 and 103. But based on the conversations that we heard tonight, I would propose that in the specific language for 97-103 that we take out the words shall be prioritized and reserved. So it would just, pardon me, take out the words prioritized and. So the sentence would read, disposal of treated effluent shall be reserved for the following uses. And then, you know, quite frankly, I would go ahead and take that next sentence, the first sentence in the next paragraph, the disposal shall be prioritized, and bold that thing out there. Just so, I mean...
If you have a conversation, could you please There's two gentlemen at the back. Could you go outside and continue the conversation? Because we're stopping the meeting until we got multiple conversations. It's becoming difficult to hear. Yes, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Seitz.
It places the last item, E. If you take out the word prioritize, I just want to make sure the board understands from my perspective, it takes item E and places it in the same balance as the other items that are on the A through E. The idea of putting in the word prioritized was to, in essence, deprioritize item E. Just so you understand, that's why we added the word prioritized. But it's a policy decision for the board. I'm not making a recommendation one way or another. I'm just making you aware of what the thinking was in doing that
stuff. John and I did talk about the prioritized, and that last item has always bothered me, quite frankly, and John and I spent a lot of time talking about that one item, and that was the reason for the word, the prioritization in there. But we want to make sure that there's the ability to do water reuse for ag, you know, to adjacent properties if we need to go there. But we want to make sure that that's really the last alternative.
And wouldn't that be taken care of by bolding that sentence immediately following?
Exactly.
I hope so. Yeah.
And then correcting
that's a very good point.
The groundwater basis to groundwater basin.
Okay, that's my error.
Okay.
I support that.
I agree. Yeah, if we bold that, I think that's because then the prioritization is down there. And we're not putting, yeah, I agree.
So any, I guess, any objection to the deletion of the first sentence with 97-103, just delete shall be prioritized and?
And
I'm sorry. It's affluent shall change to shall be reserved and then bold that sentence. Well, I think everybody agreed on that. That was a.
Can I propose that we pass wastewater treatment design flows?
Microphone. Could I propose that we pass over wastewater treatment design flows? Because I think we've already agreed on drainage and dewatering, of adding that condition about non-potable for construction. Mm-hmm. And I'll get you a copy of this. And then we would add the language from condition 111. The language from 111, which I can't find. Oh, pardon me. The language from 111 would say, only in the event of emergency situation, non-potable water may be used. And only if non-potable water is determined to be infeasible. That seems kind of repetitive, but it's the Planning Commission's language. So we just take the last sentence out of their condition about flushing and add it to our condition about construction. I mean, I think if there's an emergency situation, we don't want to preclude life, health, and safety if they need to use water in an emergency. So I think we could accept drainage and dewatering with the addition of
right.
that.
And I guess I'd ask if you could mark that so that Ms. Kudar can have
that's what
that.
I said. I'll I'll communicate that.
I'm trying.
I'll get it to you before we, depending on what
Mr. Seitz, did you want to interject something?
No, I just wanted to make sure staff understood. The comment was, I thought the comment was based on upper aquifer water and lower aquifer water. And clearly, there may be if that's the concern, there may well be potable water from the upper portion of the aquifer. But I just want to make sure that I'm not here to argue one way or the other, but just to make sure that the condition or the language is exactly what the board is intending it to be.
Let me reread this again. It says reclaimed non-potable water should be used wherever possible.
Okay.
Then it's only in an emergency situation that you would not use reclaimed non-potable water.
Okay. We've got water from a South Bay Boulevard well. We could sell them.
That's the proposal.
Okay, is there any objection to that language. Okay, that's a unanimous straw vote on that one.
Services, this language is the same language from before, except for the fact that we didn't have a specific condition that we wanted to include. We just talked in conceptually. So John and I developed a language for a specific condition.
Object. Director Sennett and I have agreed to trade out my spot on your road closing committee, subcommittee. Because he is an encroachment permit engineer used to dealing with these road issues all the time. And
I appreciate that because I kept wondering why there was three of us.
Yeah, he's going to take my spot. Now we're doing design flows?
The ever popular wastewater treatment design flows. Oh, come on.
I mean, I understand your rationale, and I think we all understand the rationale. My concern is I don't want to try to dictate the design engineering loads and flows because I'm not an engineer. I mean,
but
bottom line.
We already were. If you look at the next to last paragraph, when this information is combined with comparable data from the other water purveyors within the prohibition zone, the design flows for the project can be calculated.
Well, then take that sentence out. I don't.
I guess my concern is the population, the use of population can really lead you down the wrong road.
And I think
that's what I was trying to convey.
I think the issue of dispute, at least from my perspective, is that second paragraph. The Estero Area Plan is the document that the EIR is based on, the technical memos are all based on, everything's based on that. And I can't agree to saying that those population estimates may not be accurate. If we can somehow say that this is, you know, our preferred approach, I don't have a problem with it. I'm just not going to be able to agree that we say that the Estero, you know, we have a put in specific a problem with that population estimate. That is the guiding planning document for this area.
And even if it was inconsistent and inflated the design load flows, it resulted in less affordability.
But it's
I don't see how that happens, quite frankly.
And it's a reference point that provides some consistency, not only to this situation but in our planning. I mean, it's the first. I mean, we keep seeing this number drop, the population number drop, significantly over the last decade. You know, from 20 previous planning documents of 25,000 down to 17.5 or 17.8. You know, we have to take that into account as we're developing our. You know, and so, I mean, as a base, we have to have something somewhere. Properties, we have commercial properties that may increase in size. I mean, to just limit this to houses and homes is really not what the guiding doc. I mean, it's a population, but you still have other development to consider.
I would personally, I mean, I could live with this if you just agreed to delete that one paragraph.
But it's reality that the Estero Area Plan estimates are off. I mean, Rob Miller came out and gave us probably the most current good estimate. It was much lower. Why not? I mean, it's like saying that you shouldn't be using our water data from 6-7 years ago before we started conserving to base your loads and flows.
And I don't disagree with that, but then again, I'm not an engineer. Okay, you are, so... I mean, you work, you know, you're in the engineering
engineer
field.
Wrote this.
You're in the engineering field, though. But if we leave that, the capacity of build-out must be consistent with A, B, and C, which sets the criteria, I think, for that next, you know, I think that's the criteria that you're trying to get in there. I don't see if you leave that in why taking that next paragraph out makes any difference to you.
Okay. Then after the number of connections available for the build-out is the most precise data available.
You could put a period there, and I'd be fine with it.
No. Chuck, really quick, what was the number that Rob gave?
17.8. I think it was 17.8.
Okay, so we're on the same one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
But that's way below the Estero Area Plan. So, I mean, we're not trying to diss any. I don't. Okay, I think it's above that.
How about this? Instead of making that a paragraph, that's another bullet, and say the capacity buildout must be consistent with, and the fourth bullet would be the number of connections available for buildout. So we don't. That way, we don't get into because we don't get into that. And the county did use. You know, this is where this came up because it was in the county documents in their tech responses on the flow and loads memos, and they're specifically basing numbers using connections. So, what I'm suggesting is that next to last sentence that I put in is simply the fourth bullet after the defined reduction in usage imposed for the conditions of water conservation. The fourth bullet would state the number of connections available for buildout. We're just asking them. I think what we're doing is asking them. Basically, we're asking them is to.
No, you can't use. It's that open. You can't use that.
We're not telling them how to use connections. We're telling it must be consistent.
But we heard testimony earlier that there are mobile home parks with few connections and many meters. How do you deal with that issue?
No, but it just says the capacity of build-out must be consistent with the number of connections available for build-out, period. Saying it's be consistent. It's not saying that's determinative of them.
Right. I don't think, you know, if a mobile home park gets built and built out, that's got to be factored in there.
Or if you have a commercial property where there's one meter serving 50 rooms in a hotel, I mean. But I could agree to compromise by moving that up to be the fourth bullet, although I'd prefer those be A, B, C, and D, personally, to be consistent with the rest of the letter. And then delete the rest of that paragraph and then keep that last paragraph. It's just saying it must be consistent with the connections. That's all it's saying.
But the analysis wasn't based on connections.
Yeah.
But it's based on connections.
Well, then we're back to just deleting that whole paragraph, which...
Why don't we mention that...
Well, I can support it because it's gonna incorporate a defined reduction in usage imposed for water conservation.
But Richard...
That's a key element for me.
It is inconsistent, though, with the connections versus build-out. It is inconsistent with any analysis up to this point. We basically just changed the whole analysis. I mean, he's absolutely correct.
And I wouldn't have brought it up, except the Planning Commission jacked up the cost for water conservation, and I believe we're not going to get a benefit because the county staff isn't going to go back and put specs in that's going to save the Prohibition Zone money. We wouldn't even be having this discussion if that hadn't happened.
Okay.
And that's why if it's not in there, it's a non-starter.
Let me come back with I'm willing to swallow this if you take that middle paragraph out. I don't see how it really significantly affects the intent of what you're saying.
Having an over-designed system, then.
Over-designed for how many people, Joe, are we talking about? How many people are you talking about? How much does that really change? They already have to over-design it by 20%, right?
I don't know how many people. What's important, but if the flows are 30% above where they need to be, and if they were reduced and they were still conservative, you're missing the opportunity up front where you're going to have their cost savings. So... Why are we spending? It goes back to why are we conserving water when we're not going to get a benefit?
But you're saying
because you have a long-term supply of water. The benefit is having the supply. I mean, it's really I'm really struggling with nitpicking a design detail when the benefit is that we have a potable water supply within our basin.
I'm not trying to not ensure we have a potable water supply.
You just said there's no benefit, and there's clearly a benefit to developing
maybe for
conservation.
The property owners who then, you know, have all the room in the world to build, but
I know.
Why is that beyond the backs of the prohibitions?
But I think, Joe, I think, you know, your last condition, which I'm calling or bullet C, a defined reduction in usage imposed for the conditions of water conservation. That's taking into account what you're arguing. So I don't know why we just can't, I don't understand why, if that's already in there, we just can't delete that one paragraph, agree to this, and move on.
Mr. President,
because
we need a motion to go past 10.
Oh, okay. Director Sennett.
I don't know why I'm getting feedback. I think there will be a benefit even if you, you know, you're not, even if you don't see the savings of the water, there will be a demonstrated savings in that you don't have to pump that water to treat it. You don't have to add the chemicals. You don't have to do a lot of things. Admittedly, it's only part of the savings, but there are savings.
I propose before we make a motion to go past 10 that we just remove that paragraph, or my motion is to go past 10.
I think we have a 4-1 vote.
Well, yeah, why don't you do your proposed language and they can take a straw vote?
Okay, then we need to go past 10. I need to make a motion that we go past 10 then.
All right. Go ahead, Ms. Goodhart.
Where have you been?
Okay, now if you could, Vice President Hilsky, why don't you go ahead and...
What?
Did you have a straw vote motion?
Oh, that we just delete the paragraph? Or that we...
We accept the
motion. No, I... You know what?
Is your mic on?
Oh, sorry. I'm going to go back and just stick by this, the planning numbers, the 17.8 or whatever it is, what's been utilized all along. I want that language in there, and I'm not comfortable with the connection language, and so I'm going back to that.
So I think we need to have a clear statement of what you're proposing, so.
Original language.
Not Joe's revised language with the three bullets, but just deleting that next paragraph.
Joe? Maybe we could say that we use that figure and as suggested by subsequent engineering findings.
Excuse me, but you know, you are violating your own rules.
Mr. Golden, this is at the board.
No, the motion was not passed before 10 o'clock. I have a clock here that tells me what the correct time is. And you've violated your own rules.
By my clock, I made the motion at 9:59.
Okay.
Okay.
It's substance. Mr. Seitz, is the motion substantive? Mr. Gold, this is for the board. Mr. Seitz, is the motion substantively before?
You're fine to continue on.
Thank you.
Substantial compliance.
Okay. Where were we?
I just don't like any language that talks about the Estero Bay Area Plan being an authoritative source for anything.
Because
it's
the numbers.
So old.
Well, actually, the uncertified one is not old, but it's not been certified.
Well, right. We can't.
What's
use
the
it.
Number, though? Are we still talking about 17.8?
No.
Yes.
19.713.
I thought it was 17.8.
Can I make a proposal then? I'll bite down hard on this one, but I'll propose that we take Joe's language and delete the middle paragraph.
I thought we had a 4-1 on that.
Wait. Why would we delete the middle paragraph? If you're assuming a
consensus.
Oh, okay, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So my straw vote would be we accept Joe's language, which would begin with the second sentence of the paragraph. We convert the three bullets to A, B, and C for consistency. Delete the next paragraph, except the last paragraph with the change 0506.
Quick, let's vote.
Okay, I'll agree to that on that section.
So I think
that's five.
The final motion then would be to approve the letter as amended.
I'll make that motion.
Can I think for a second? Because I was away.
Why start now?
Oh, boy.
Don't start thinking now.
I would like to copy this letter also to Regional Water Quality and Coastal Commission. They're not included on the distribution list, but I would like to do that also. Thank you. If the seconder will agree to that.
Seconder agrees. I just wanted to relook at the affordability one last time since I had objected to that and see if I can bite and accept that, Vice President Olhilsky. All right. I think we have a...
Vice President Olhilsky.
Yes.
Director Kelly.
Yes.
Director Cesena.
Yes.
Director Sennett.
Yes.
President Sparks.
Yes.
No way.
I will get together with Ann and make sure you have the changes that I made, and then we'll get it corrected.
Okay, that's our last agenda item. And then if there is anyone here that wasn't earlier that did want to make general public comment, I think I'd allow it. Okay, seeing none. Oh. So we'll have general public comment. Anyone that did not speak earlier want to say anything? Okay, then we'll close that. And any closing director comments? Director Kelly.
On Tuesday, September 22nd, from 7 to 9, there is the St. Benedict's Episcopal Church is looking at the idea of using part of their land as across from the cemetery, and it's at 7 o'clock. So, thank you.
Director Sennett?
Well, in saying goodnight, I'd like to remind people that there are some that can't afford to retrofit their home. But there are some that can afford it, and you stall because of various reasons. I was one of those for a while, but I finally bit the bullet and refitted my house with efficient toilets, and I feel real good about it each time I flush. And I encourage you to. I think you'll get a similar feeling of helping the community, and it's a good thing to do. So I encourage everybody to do that.
Director Cesena?
Indoor, yeah.
Director Cesena?
On the 19th, Coastal Cleanup Day will be occurring. There are two locations in town, I think, where we have cleanups going on, one at the Baywood Pier and at Cuesta Inlet. You can call the CSD office, 528-9370, if you want to volunteer or drop us an email. We'll get you on one of those teams. And on the 12th, office hours, 9 to 11, at the CSD office. I'm not promising coffee and donuts or anything, but I'll be there.
Vice President Olhilsky? Oh, it's 9
to
o'clock.
Coastal cleanup hours? I believe that'll start at 9 as well.
I'd like to express my appreciation to the board for coming to a consensus on that letter. I think that it's important that we express our opinion to the county. I think it's important that we're able to reach a consensus. Clearly, we know we don't agree on all aspects of the project, but there are things that we can't agree on, and I think it's important that we're able to do that. Lastly, 9/15, which is September 15th at 5:30 at the fire station, the Emergency Service Advisory Committee will be meeting for two issues. One is the Fire Protection Plan, the final draft, which we're going to take final public comment on. And I think for those of you who are interested, especially that live on the perimeter of the community, concerned about fire hazards to your property, it's important that we get your input if you have any. And we'll also be starting our discussions on the strategic plan for the emergency services. So that's it. Thank you.
All right, and thanks everybody for coming. Also, wanted to again thank Vice President Olhilsky, who had represented us during the Planning Commission hearings. As everybody knows, they were.